right, that was Guns N' Roses with Mr. Brownstone. And today is August 27th, 2007. I'm only able to be on for about an hour today, but we're going to talk about a few stories. And I've got to call my lawyer and find out about my preliminary hearing, which is scheduled for this Wednesday in the morning. So I'll be running, as I say, 2 p.m. Central until 3 p.m. And hopefully this is going through, and if not, I'm taping it. I'll put it up myself. But first thing we want to talk about today is something that's pretty funny if you haven't seen it. And this is what I'm going to do here is play this song that apparently is, I don't know if it's put together by someone at BET or it's just been running on BET, but it's funny as hell, and it's a takeoff on some hip-hopper. And it's kind of a takeoff on hip-hop and a public service announcement. And I don't know how well this is going to come through, but let's play it. It only takes a couple of minutes, and then we'll talk about that a little bit. Okay, here it goes. Listen to the lyrics.
Yeah! What's up, y'all? This is your boy, D-Mike. See, I usually do songs with, like, hooks and concepts and shit, right? So fuck that, man. I'm trying to go platinum. So I'm about to rock this shit. Check this out, y'all.
Read a book, read a book, read a motherfucking book. Read a book, read a book, read a motherfucking book. Read a book, read a book, read a motherfucking book. Read a book, read a book, read a motherfucking book.
That's just too goddamn funny. I mean, that's apparently something that's running on BET. Read a book, and that will linger long in my memory. I don't know about yours, but when you have to, like I said, and I just posted a bunch more stuff on the front page, and I said, when you have to, when I originally saw that, I thought, is that a satire, or is that serious? And with blacks, you never know. It has to be so basic level that there really isn't any way to satirize them. And in fact, I think that was, although it is somewhat, it's a spoof of a certain rapper, it still is basically intended seriously. As you can see from the thousands of comments on the page, and I posted the link to this video on vnnforum.com, general discussion, the sticky at the top where we keep our radio stuff that I update every time I do a show. So go to that link and you can read the comments and judge for yourself. Now, I got about two or three things on my shopping agenda today. Now, let's see. I want to switch over to a, this is a pretty interesting story about Tulsa. And apparently they have a guy there named Sheriff Stanley Glantz. And they put down some pretty hard rules, and they've really driven the Hispanic population out of there. Kind of, you know, it's farts under a blanket. I mean, they're just going somewhere else in the U.S. But the point is that it demonstrates that it is the refusal of the Jew-controlled federal government to enforce the law. It's not a failure of law. We have the laws. It's not a failure of will. The will is there, but the will is there on the opposite side. The will is there to let these people in. And as long as we keep pretending that the government just isn't functioning right because it's not staffed with intelligent people like us, the longer we will be under the Jewish thumb. And it's been that way with public education for decades. What you have are people who say the public schools are failing. No, they're not failing. You are failing to understand the purpose for which they were set up. You are failing to understand the motives of the people running them. You are failing to understand the ideology that drives the people who got the feds into education in the first place and created the agenda that your kid is taught in school. And so it is with illegal aliens flooding the country. We have laws that prevent them doing that, but they're not enforced. But we've subcontracted to the Jews essentially the legal mechanism that runs the country and the policy-setting mechanism, whether foreign or domestic, so that we find in the few instances where whites fight back and they're able to get some kind of a restriction in a small town, quickly the lawsuit is brought to the courts and it's either halted or reversed, whatever the simple thing the town planned to do, like Hazleton, Pennsylvania. Anyway, let's read a little bit of this story. I think it's got some interesting stuff. And again, this is WorldNet Daily, and that's Joe Suck Poop Farah. He's one of the most assiduous Jewish ass lickers on the planet. Old shitlips Joe Farah. And he's been a big beneficiary of the boom in new media with the rise of the internet, however. Although he disagrees with the Republicans and the Jews on... He doesn't just disagree with the Jews on anything, but he has pushed up to some extent back against... in favor of controlling the borders. But anyway... Mandatory deportation has illegals on the run. State law limiting benefits looms. Limiting benefits to illegals. An estimated 25,000 take to the road. This shows you just how easy it would be to do something about the Mex invasion if the right people were in power. So as thousands of Hispanics have fled the Tulsa, Oklahoma area in the shadow of a looming state law that limits benefits and mandates deportation for illegal aliens, according to a report from KTUL Television in Tulsa. The state of Oklahoma recently approved a new law that requires deportation for illegal aliens who are arrested and limits benefits and jobs to those individuals. So I don't know why you wouldn't just cut them off completely, but the report said in East Tulsa, where a community of Hispanics has grown over recent years, there's been a sudden drop in population. So, gee, you pass a law that requires deportation for illegal aliens, and all of a sudden they leave. Business owner Simon Navarro has been in business there 11 years and said the tough laws chased away 30% of the state's Hispanic population. 2 months ago, I heard 25,000 Hispanics have left Oklahoma. They are leaving. A lot have already left. People are leaving. He said they're scared of the sheriff. A spokesman for Tulsa's Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, Francisco Trevino, said he believes the law and its results will hurt restaurants, construction companies, and other service corporations, such as lawn care. They do everything we don't want them to do, or they do everything we don't want to do, he said, somehow overlooking the fact that America was built completely without Hispanic help or labor. In fact, you know, they do everything we don't want to do, then how come that white guy down in, I think, South Carolina got arrested for protesting a man who normally used his services not going with him in favor of a company that employed illegal aliens? And he went out and protested them and himself got arrested. So there are whites who want to do this work. And they want to do the work for white wages. But right now this country is being run in the interest of the Jews and global business elite who care only about increasing their own profits. And that means cutting labor, cutting wages. And if the rest of the world is reduced to third world level, if the wage rate falls that far, they don't care. I guess. At least there's no reason to think they care. These people at the top, if you take Bill Gates, Bill Gates is pouring tens of millions of dollars in his new role as a philanthropist into African education and African welfare. Talk about pouring money down a rat hole. Africa's kind of the continent version of that boat joke, you know, what a boat is a hole in the water that you pour money into. Now, you could say the same thing about Africa. And then you take someone like Warren Buffett, who's, you know, he's bullish. He thinks the future for America is bright and doesn't see any kind of racial problems. Of course, this is the guy who has more billions than anyone in the world, and he chooses to live in Omaha, Nebraska. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to Nebraska, and I'm sure in many ways there are fine people living there, but if you had $1 billion, you wouldn't live in Nebraska unless you had very, very, very bad taste. Although I must say there are some nice little fishing holes along the Platte River that are visible from I-80. I've always wanted to fish there, but I never stopped and got out. It wouldn't be strictly legal, but looks like there'd be some nice bass in there. Love Nebraska. Don't want to lose any votes out there. Okay, let's see here. Anyway, so trying to figure out where these Hispanics, these Mexish shitskins, pardon my English, are fleeing to. Officials say many of those departing apparently are heading either to Kansas or Arkansas, but that may not be for long since Arkansas is about to adopt a law similar to Oklahoma's and Kansas is considering a similar move. Not bad, huh? Kind of grassroots efforts to do what the Jews will not do, and that is enact, that is enforced law that is passed with the consent of the majority. It was pure, extreme, grassroots anger that got them to back off temporarily on the law granting these third world invaders asylum. And don't think they won't push it forward again, and they aren't going to act just as though it was passed in the first place. And so this thing will be headed to court. Tulsa County Sheriff Stanley Glantz told KTUL that the impact of the illegal alien population is evident all over, especially in the jail. We see the effects of gangs. We see the effect of illegal immigrants. We see the effect of drugs. We see the effect of methamphetamines, he said. We want to go after the criminal element that we have in this community, i.e., you know, like that's distinguishable from the Mexican element, added U.S. Rep. John Sullivan. People that commit crimes, drug trafficking, murder, rape, DUI, carrying a concealed weapon. The newly trained officers will be on the job as early as October, before the November effective date of the new law. They say the bottom line is that illegal aliens in Tulsa County who commit a crime will be deported. So, this law is not even on the books and the Mexi shits are fleeing. But now, here's the opposition to it, and this is the typical sort of thing that you see. The leftists are very well organized, and they're well organized in part because, like I've said on other shows, they're a hostile minority. They don't represent the majority view, so the only way they can win is by controlling the media, the educational establishment, and the government. And this was all advised, and what we talked about, the shift from controlling the factors of production, like the steel mills, to controlling the idea and opinion-generating sectors of the media, and that was advised by the Italian communist Gramsci, political theorist. And it was carried out by the Leninists in their long march through the institutions. That's a famous phrase, and they undertook that here in the U.S. over the course of the 20th century and achieved primacy sometime in the 1960s. And today, they are. The point here is that having taken over these institutions, they fund their own groups so that they're in kind of the perpetual majority, even though they represent only a minority of the political will in the country. If you counted people one by one, but a bunch of individuals who aren't organized represent only a potential political power. Whereas if you have even a few that actually are organized, they represent real power, and they hold real power, and they use that to fund themselves. That's how they're so easily able to file lawsuits and get favorable coverage in the media. They're all the same people. They're part of the cult. So the state law may still face a legal challenge. Miguel Rivera of the National Coalition of Latino Clergy and Christian Leaders said it could be in federal court as soon as October 1st. So in the law could be in court before it's actually enacted in November, or comes into place in November. He said the argument likely would be that Oklahoma's House Bill 1804 preempts federal immigration law, which is much more lenient than the Oklahoma statute. The new effort to tighten and enforce immigration limits has prompted a severe reaction. Several billboards have gone up questioning the new law. Do you think they make arguments against the law? Of course not. They smear the character of the people who are trying to protect themselves, their communities, and their own interests. You know that. You know that they're going to call the people who put in this law forbidding illegal aliens from living free here in this country, simply deporting illegal aliens. You know what they're going to say about people who don't want people here illegally. The left is always on the side of the criminal. The left is the criminal element. One of the billboards, funded by the United Front Task Force, asks, is it okay for Oklahoma to have a law that promotes hate among people? So having borders and having laws to enforce citizenship is hate. Again, we see, as always, the left never argues. All it does is smear and murder. And it works. It's worked for 150 years. The other billboard, by the American Dream Coalition, shows a tearful girl clutching a teddy bear with the statement, "My mommy is not a criminal. She is a hardworking Hispanic woman." Hardworking Hispanic woman. All you're trying to do is cause little girls to cry because their noble mothers who only want to come here and work are endangered by your racist piece of hate legislation. But on the television station forums page, a listener responded, "We need to put up more signs that say Okies don't hate illegal immigrants. They just want them legal. Deport all illegal immigrants now." No, that's wrong. You never respond to their smears of your character. You always attack them. That's the way to beat the Judeo left. You beat the Jews by attacking them verbally and physically. That's what they do to you. They bring a gun to the gunfight. We have to bring a gun to the gunfight, too. And when we do, we win. When the Freikorps, the Germans after World War I, came back to their country, they found all kinds of Jewish radicals, the blood relatives of those in favor of the Mex invasion, trying to communize their city and stage little putches and little social, little mini revolutions in the different Länder, the different states of Germany and the cities. And the Freistaat didn't fuck around with them. They fought them. They fought many, many, many physical street battles with the communists. And they would take people like Rosa Luxemburg and shoot her in the head and throw her in her canal. That's a very successful way. It's a time-honored way of getting rid of Jewish communists, since they won't argue honestly because they represent only about 2% of the sentiment of the nation. That is, if you had unqueered, Aryan-owned media, the type of insanity peddled by Jews would be bought only by a tiny minority of whites who would be pretty much indistinguishable from the insane or the deranged or the malocclusive. The predecessors of the Nazis, the Freikorps, the soldiers returning from war, realized that, you know, these people are dead serious. They did stage successful coups in several German cities, but ultimately the Freikorps and the German rightists, the Germans drove the Jews and the Jew-duped Germans out of power, and they seized power, and that was evident in Hitler. And that's why they hate Hitler so much. Hitler was the ultimate culmination of that reaction against Jewish communism. Well, this is Jewish communism. It's just in a slightly different form. The form it takes today is, you know, look, screw the workers and the class thing. Let's go after the race thing. Let's simply elect a new people. We elect a new people by ripping down borders and letting in anybody from the four corners of the earth or the seven sewers of the earth. And these people are dumber, literally dumber. IQ tests are lower. They're more pliable. They're more quiescent, the Asians. And the black and the brown population may be more violent individually, but they're not capable of organizing so much. All the brown organizations in this country, and Mexicans are famous for never forming any kind of associations or self-help stuff or anything. All the Mexican, pro-Mexican transportation in this country came originally from the Ford Foundation. It's wholly artificially created, parallel to the way that the Jews created the NAACP, the lobby for black rights, in order to destroy settled, safe, secure, profitable, progressive, beautiful, creative white community. How can we shower ranger that, thought the Jews, sitting around their round tables around 1900. Well, let's use the whites to crowbar them, agitate for Negro rights and equality, even though they aren't equal. We know that. We don't believe for a minute niggers are equal. We won't let them into Israel, but here we can use them to destroy the whites. We play divide and conquer, as Jew Sternlight has said. I'm sorry, Jew Steven Steinlight has said. And so what they try to do, speaking for them, the majority passes a law that does something that the left doesn't like. In this instance, it deports people who are here illegally, you know, pretty open and shut. Immediately, the left slams the character and gets the law into a court where they know they'll meet a friend, because the Jews dominate the law schools, and they essentially force everyone to be a leftist or they won't give them a law degree. See Matt Hale in that regard. He was going to get his law degree to defend whites. He passed all his courses, he passed all his requirements, and they wouldn't give him a law degree, even though he'd earned it, because they claimed he violated the Morals Clause. You have to think like a Jew and a leftist, or you can't get a law degree. These are the people running the courts, so no big surprise that running the courts is exactly what the left does the minute it experiences some kind of popular obstacle, since its agenda is so against what the people want. So, just to finish up, the Republican who wrote House Bill 1804, Randy Terrell of Moore, said the plan doesn't discriminate, harass, or single out anyone unless they are breaking the law. This isn't about whether you are for or against immigration or for or against immigrants. It doesn't matter what your skin color is or if you speak with an accent. What matters is if you are in the country legally or illegally. The only people threatened by House Bill 1804 are those who choose to break the law, he said. The final paragraph, it eliminates most taxpayer subsidies for illegal immigrants and allows state and local law enforcement officers to verify the residency status of those arrested. It also cracks down on business owners who employ illegal immigrants. I'd like to see a little more on that, but they don't have it. But again, the point here is the two people they quote in response to the left accept the need to defend themselves against the claims that they're racist. Well, let me tell you, defending yourself against the left doesn't work. They will multiply the attacks. Just like cops can multiply the charges with a little bit of paperwork and force you to spend thousands of dollars defending yourself, the left will endlessly smear your character. It will never, ever allow you to prove that you're honest in your motivation. You have to know that before you start and realize what the game is. And if you don't know the game you're playing, you can't win it. So you have to be damn sure you know what you're dealing with. The way you would go after the left is to attack it. Call it Jews. Call the Jews Jews. And call the other ones homos, queers, whatever they are. Call them white-hating browns. Go after their motives. Go after their motives. They hate white. When they say they're anti-racist, that means they're anti-white. They hate white people. So, you got to know that going in, and that's just political tactics 101. And the right never seems to grasp that. It's almost what defines the right. And I think there's a predisposition there because they're Christian and they're very concerned about morals. There's a disposition to be unwilling to question the motives of the other. And that's a large part of the reason that they've always, people push the golden rule, behave as unto others as you want them to behave unto you. Well, they're not like you. So that's a dangerous law to follow. It might make sense that people are fundamentally the same, but other races are not the same as whites, and to expect them to act like whites is to court genocidal foolishness. So blacks and Mexicans will do whatever and say whatever it takes to gain themselves an advantage. You know, they don't think abstractly or theoretically about fairness. They think about what's good for Mexicans. And what's good for Mexicans is living in a nice, rich, white place like this. What do they care if they can't sustain it? It's still better than what they left in Mexico. We have to look out for ourselves, and we are the only ones who will do that. So understand that. All right, enough of that. I think I'll play a little song here, and then we'll come back with the second part of the show. I got two more stories to cover in the next half hour. I'm going to play what should I play? I'll play one by Cat Stevens. All right. We're only doing one song because it's 1 hour today. So one song every time we play a song. Back shortly.
Breaking my heart, you're leaving. Baby, I'm grieving. But if you wanna leave, take good care. Hope you have a lot of nice things to wear. Then a lot of nice things turn bad out there.
Second part of today's show, I want to talk about two other stories. The one I want to talk about here is a story I found in Men's News Daily. It's on the front page of VNN, govnn.com. University students getting suckered in with credit cards. And let's see here. I'll read a little bit of this. There is really a couple of pretty remarkable statistics in here that I don't think were true even in my time when I was in school back in the mid-80s. We had bank cards back then, but I don't think too many people had a credit card unless maybe they had one that was a secondary card given to them by their parents for emergencies. But I think things have changed. And part of the general credit picture today, the big picture is that they've, and we see this in the meltdown of the housing, is they've loaned so much money. They used up all the creditworthy people long ago. They took X amount of credit, and they couldn't be forced to take any more. They're very careful. They went beyond that, and they got into the uncreditworthy. And then below that, they finally started going after college students. And I don't know where the ultimate end game of this, but it's basically, hey, if they're old enough to read, they're old enough to have a credit card, you know, something like that. Maybe I can see Jews pushing something like, you know, credit for underage kids, just the way they push, you know, pedophilia on the back end of the faggotry. So every single vice, and this is stuff that E. Michael Jones talks about quite a bit. And we're going to discuss his book certainly within the next 2 weeks. We're going to have some readings out of there and talk about that, much as we did with the PC, the Ellis book we finished with last week. Anyway, let me read a little. University students getting suckered in with credit cards. Every university student knows they should have a credit card. You have to have a second form of ID on many financial transactions. You have to have one to establish good credit. And the more you use them, the more you will accrue bonus points toward cash, mileage credits, and various free gifts. P.T. Barnum said there's a sucker born every minute, but it doesn't have to be you. And there's a number of things there. Let's read a little more, though. Here's the thing that struck me. About half of the first-year university students have at least one credit card. By the second year, they nearly all do. That, to me, is amazing. About 60% of them pay off their balance each month. Even the most responsible of these students is succumbing to developing the worst mental rules of thumb on how to think about their finances. Now, let's talk a little turkey about money and debt and credit cards. I'm going to give you some of the facts about them. First of all, you have to have a credit card to establish good credit. Why do you need good credit? Answer is you don't need good credit. There is no such thing as good credit. There's just credit and there's money. And what you need is money. You don't need good credit unless you intend to steal the money that you're loaned. And you might think it bad of me, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing to do. But if you don't intend to steal the money that you're loaned, you don't really need credit. All credit is going to lead to is problems. Credit is a way of living now in a way that you haven't earned. So chances are a better option than credit is earning what you need to buy what you want, or analyzing what you want and finding out whether it's really good for you, and if it isn't, you don't need it. And when you do that, you're going to eliminate 99% of what you might theoretically need credit for. Now, let's see. I find it just amazing that he says 60% of them. He says about 50% of university, about half first-year students have one credit card. By the second year, they nearly all do. That's astonishing to me. I don't think that was the case in the 80s, but I haven't seen any stats on it. And then he says 60% of them pay off their balance each month. The other ones don't. Now, there's kind of a meta point to be made here, which is that what are they buying when they buy a college education? Most of these students are going into debt to go to college in the first place. So that's kind of the macrocosm in which the microcosm of these credit cards exists. So they're both problems, but the one's bigger than the other. I mean, if you go to Duke, you're paying $40,000 a year, and how many people can pull that out of their ass? $40,000 a year to be taught by people who signed the letter essentially saying, cut the balls off these three white guys because some nigger whore accused them of rape. So now, is that a valid use of credit, taking out a loan to go to a college that hires people who have that kind of an attitude toward white males? Of course it's not the right thing to do. It's ridiculous use of money. And that may be an exceptionally high-priced and bad example of what college education is, but I assure you it's not too far from what it is everywhere. It costs too much, you pay a lot of money that you don't have, and you get that money on credit, and you take courses from people who are in the grip of Marx or some other Jew or some other communist. And that's what a college education is. And they claim it makes you more money in the long. No. Higher IQ is what leads to more money. Correlation is not causation, as they say. The fact that someone makes more money who's gone to college, it does not prove that it's college that's making them more money. And you need to think hard about wasting four of the best physical years of your life in college. And they're physical, I mean intellectual as well as physical. And, you know, what do the people do? I see them around here. I mean, they drink, they party, they go take classes from people who don't have much to teach. I did the same thing. And I felt bad about it most of the time. I thought about dropping out when I was a sophomore. I just, what is the point of this? And, of course, it wasn't my money that I spent on it. But in retrospect, with the Internet, nah, it's not worth doing at all. The only reason I can see to go to college is to get specific knowledge. You might get it at a technical school or to prepare the basis for going to law school. But going to law school is only worth it if you have an exit strategy, which is you have to work a few years to make the good money to make it worthwhile to contract the debt to go to law school in the first place. So you have to think that stuff out very, very carefully. Now, just the history of credit cards, it used to be that, we'll talk a little about the way they work, it used to be that credit cards were uncommon. I think even up until the early 70s, credit cards were not common. And in some places like Germany, they still aren't really common because it's just not really a Germanic trait of taking a bunch of money on credit. Credit's the most dangerous thing in the world. That's how the Jews are able to acquire all the lands that they've acquired. They put out these contracts and conditions, and people don't really read them. They don't realize if you miss a payment by one day, all of a sudden you go from paying 0% to paying, or 6% to paying 24%. And they make ridiculous amounts of money on these little loans. And people just aren't aware of that stuff. They don't pay attention to the fine print. They figure, I'll pay 50 a month and, you know, whatever. I'm paying the balance down a little bit. It's insane. That's how they get you. You don't need the stuff that you're putting on that credit card. But a couple facts about credit. If you get into trouble with it, I mean serious trouble where you owe tens of thousands of dollars, Congress has revise the bankruptcy laws to make it a little bit tighter, so it's harder to declare bankruptcy, which, you know, guess who's given a lot of money to congressmen? It's the credit card companies. It's sure as hell not the little guy who's maybe in a bad situation and using the credit card to pay some bills and gets stuck with medical problems or whatever. He's not the one giving money, so Congress doesn't care about him. Nevertheless, the way it works is that by law, they can only hold bad debt on their books for so long. If you simply are in that bad of a situation and you go 5-6 months without paying, they will grow desperate. The only option they have is to sell their bad debt off to hard asses who try to collect. And so at the end of that period, about 270 days, they, by law, can't have bad debt on their book. It has to be resolved one way or another. They will come to you and offer to settle for maybe 60 cents on the dollar, but basically they'll take whatever the hell they can get. And you don't need these credit repair companies you might see on TV. All they're doing is the same thing you can do. They're just simply talking to your creditors and making a deal. You can always talk to your creditors and make a deal with them. Say, look, I don't have the money now, but I'll have it. I can pay you this much on this date. So always don't be afraid. Go to them and talk to them and clear it up and try to clear it up. If you're really weighing over your head, you might declare bankruptcy or you might simply just steal it. Just don't pay them. And then when they want to settle, say, fuck you. I don't have any money. I'm not paying you, and take it. I don't advise that, but it's possible. You can get away with it on your bankruptcy if they don't really look into it. It's like any state thing. I'm sure all kinds of people have stolen all kinds of money. And after all, who are you stealing it from? You're stealing it from a bunch of crooks who are trying to get college students essentially hooked on the equivalent of drugs. They're getting a college education they don't need at a ridiculous price. Plus, they're being, you know, thrown easy credit offers on the side. I mean, you're luring them into this stuff. So if they get cheated out of money by people declaring bankruptcy, who the hell would cry for them? Not me. I think it's great. And the fact is, by law, there's nothing much they can really do to harass you. They can call you. Sometimes in extreme cases, they might call your neighbor or something or some little dirty trick. But really, they can't really do much. They can't come after you and physically beat you. They can't throw you in jail. So that's the truth about credit cards. Don't pay your bill for about 6 months, and they'll settle for 60%. Or basically, they'll settle for whatever the hell they can get. Or if they don't settle, they'll probably end up selling for 10 cents on the dollar to some credit agency that will come after you trying to get it. they can't get it, if you, the minute you declare bankruptcy, they have to get off your ass by law. So that's the facts about it. The other ways you can use credit besides stealing it, de facto or simply literally stealing it, are you could use it, using credit so that you have good, that's kind of bullshit. That's like saying you have to buy your little kid life insurance so that when he's older, he'll be able to buy it. There'll always be someone willing to sell you insurance. You can believe that. But they fool a lot of people with that kind of garbage. So credit, maybe you might want to take a little credit to buy a house. That's about the only conceivable thing. You certainly don't want to take credit to buy a car or any other kind of consumable. The way to buy cars, my opinion, the way to buy everything is to get the cash you need for it and buy it outright. Decide what kind of car you want, what you're willing to pay for it, and then find it. And then if they agree to you, then buy it. And if they don't agree, go somewhere else. Obviously, you're going to have to be somewhat realistic, but there's plenty of ways to figure out how much a car is worth and take the haggling out of it. Figure out what you want to pay. Go do it. Offer them cash in the barrelhead. They will take it. Most of the time, especially now. Why do you think they're offering the 0% down? I mean, the car business is a lousy business to be in. Making cars, the American ones are going bankrupt. They offer all kinds of incentives. Don't buy a new car. Buy a used car. Used cars 2 to 4 years older where you get the best value for your money. Get something that's doesn't take a lot of gas. Gas is high and not going to be going down. Pretty easy to do. As for a house, it used to be, you know, they'd say save up, you know, maybe 25% of your down payment or a minimum of 10%, but that's not fun enough. They had to casinoize the whole thing. So, it all really goes back to kind of a decline in morality, and people want stuff that they haven't earned, and they don't want to wait. They don't want to delay gratification. So it's kind of the niggerization of white morals that proceeds in tandem with the niggerization of everything else in society. You see how it all fits together, the easy sex, the easy credit, the dropping of standards. You see, all these different things that appear on the surface to be unrelated, they all are related. There's been kind of a moral revolution. What the Jew is trying to do, as E. Michael Jones might say, is control you through your passions. You want to live in a nice big house. You want to drive an awesome car. You want to have spinning rims if you're a nigger. You want to have, a stupid gold grill if you're a nigger. You want to have a big SUV if you're white. I mean, they get you with all these different things, and pretty soon, you're sitting there paying a little, and you're essentially in debt slavery to these people. And then they tighten up the laws for bankruptcy. So I would say save up the cash and buy the house outright, just like the car. If that's a little too much, or there's a little too much pressure on you from the size of your family, maybe you need to go into a little bit of debt. But as your first recourse, try to go to your parents or your in-laws and get a debt at a set rate where, there's enough bonds that they know you're not going to crap out on them and they're not going to jack the price or anything. That's the best way to do it. That's how a lot of these ethnic groups do it, and they form kind of mutual purchasing cooperatives almost. Clan cooperatives, Koreans and such do that. But I would say save the money. Live low in the hog. Keep your expenses low. Save, saving 10% of your income, that's nothing. You should save 50 to 80% of your income. Make as much as you can and save as much of it as you can. Because money is the only freedom you'll get in the Jewish tyranny called America right now. So, using these credit cards, they've shown, as this article says, that people using credit cards spend twice as much as people spending cash. Because it's not real to you. It's not real to you when you're using a piece of plastic because you don't feel the pain until the end of the month. So, be smart. Stay out of debt. Debt is slavery. That's an absolute truth that our ancestors knew, and some of us have had to relearn at painful cost. So, college itself is a form of debt slavery for an awful lot of people. I'm not just talking college either. There's plenty of people who have gone to law school, and then at the end of it, due to life changes or whatever, they haven't had enough money to pay back their law school debts. Don't get into any kind of professional schooling or college unless you have an exit strategy. Where are you going to be? What's it going to do for you? If you worked at McDonald's for 10 years, you could calculate how much money you're going to have and know your expenses and whatever, and you could come out with enough money. You could come out with enough money to buy a house outright at the end of that period. There's a lot to be said for simply entering the workforce as early as you can, because college is in large measure bullshit. Work is real. College is bullshit because you're writing something to hopefully get the good approval of a professor. You're writing in some pages. There's no economic demand for that paper. It's just an exercise, rather a blank exercise. In the real world, people only do things to make money, and that's a very stern taskmaster. And it's a good way to teach you how to write. It taught me how to write. College teaches you how to write long-winded garbage. Writing stuff that has to be sold teaches you to get right to the point and collect the stuff that people actually want. That's how the world works. You're better to get into that pretty much as quickly as you can and to save your money and get rich by the time you're, 30, 35. That's the way to do it. I've gone on too long in this story because the other one is the one that's, I think, most interesting. Well, we'll leave that there, but something we'll go back to in future radio shows. Oops, did I just chop it out? I think I did. Where is it? Anyway, the four stories, the four we've talked about today are all on the main page of VNN. I'm going to play a little song here, and then I'll go to the final story. Maybe I'll run a little over, but I can't run too far over. So, let's see. Nope, I think I'll go right to this story. Here it is. All right, now this is a story about myths about brown recluse spiders. And I think this is a fascinating non-political case study in how the media warp perceptions. And that is, going back to who rules America, Pierce's point that everything we know about the outside world comes from the media. All we know, what we see with our own eyes is a little tiny scoop. What we hear from other people is just a little tiny scoop. But everything else we know comes from the media. And the media are owned by Jews, and the Jews put out stuff that benefits their agenda. To verify this, we can occasionally find non-political examples where there's no benefit, there's no political benefit to anybody, but it just shows the extreme power of these media to shape what people believe about the world and to magnify threats, say, whether it's the threat of a brown recluse spider's poison or whether it's the threat of an impending snowstorm. I've mentioned that before. I've written about it. Jew Dennis Prager, immaterial that he's a Jew. It's just an example that came up in some of his writing. He was going to give a speech, I think, in Philadelphia, and he had to drive over there from New York. And he said the radio and the TV had been blaring for, days about this horrible, horrible thunderstorm snowstorm on the way, so that they scared everybody off the roads, and he was able to drive there easily during what should have been the height of rush hour. So the media, like the Swedish adage has it about worry gives little things big shadows, the media give little things big shadows, and they give big things little shadows. Like the Holocaust versus what the Kikes did, doesn't even have a name, in the Ukraine. One is an imaginary atrocity, and I posted a recent article from the LA Times. It's about 3 yards long about some demented Alzheimer's having Jew woman who's, the Nazis are coming for me again, oi, 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 and inventing the Holocaust and denying the Holocaust they're responsible for. So let's look at this, what this article says about the brown recluse spider. And it doesn't theorize the way I am. It points out the facts, but I'm going to explain to you where it comes from. This is from, I don't know what this is, the AMA News or American Medical News from the AMA, I guess. Convenient culprit, myths around the brown recluse spider. The reputation of the shy, retiring Loxosceles reclusa far exceeds the spider's range, confusing efforts to diagnose or accurately track the true incidence of its bite. Now, let's see here. Last fall, when a 7-month-old child admitted to a New York hospital with a swollen arm and running sore developed hemolytic anemia, the working diagnosis was brown recluse spider bite. But days later, cutaneous anthrax was reported at media offices in the city, and the baby, who had visited the ABC's news studio with his mother, tested positive for the bacilli. The infant's severe systemic symptoms were atypical for anthrax, a disease all but unheard of in the U.S. population centers for decades. It was, in other words, an interesting case and one that drew significant attention in light of the national emergency, the country's youngest anthrax victim. But in other respects, the case was commonplace. More than 2,000 brown recluse bites are reported to poison control centers each year. And if epidemiology and confirmed cases are any indication, most of them are something else. Doctors are horrible about misdiagnosing any kind of necrotic-looking wounds as brown recluse bites, says Sean P. Bush, MD, a professor of emergency medicine at Loma Linda School of Medicine, an envenomation specialist. He has become the go-to doctor in Southern California for suspected spider bites. In the emergency department, quote, "You see a necrotic wound every other shift," he says, "but spider bites are a rarity, even with black widows, which are totally ubiquitous here." Rad. He only sees about half a dozen bites a year. If it's an exciting year, maybe 10. And Dr. Bush doesn't see any brown recluse bites. "There are no populations of brown recluses in California," wrote Richard S. Vetter in the Western Journal of Medicine in November 2000, "yet several hundred cases of brown recluse bites have been reported to me in the past decade." The medical community believes the brown recluse is a common constituent of the spider fauna throughout the country, says Vetter, an arachnologist at the University of California, Riverside. He and Dr. Bush co-authored the Annals of Emergency Medicine's May editorial on overdiagnosis of the brown recluse bite. They're not the first to try to correct that impression. In 1983, arachnologist Willis Gertsch, Ph.D., and toxicologist Finlay Russell, M.D., wrote in Toxicon that some 600 spider bite cases seen at Los Angeles County General over 10 years, 80% were something else. Patients came to the hospital as probably brown recluse, and the brown recluse is not found within 1,000 miles of the hospital, they wrote. The brown recluse inhabits primarily south-central states from Texas to Tennessee, but bites are reported regularly across the country. It's a myth, says Vetter, that brown recluses are transported all around the country, and that's how people get bit. So, the shy, retiring recluse is seldom encountered if it can avoid it. Nocturnal, fragile, and easily damaged, it bites when crushed in its retreat or when someone rolls onto it in a bed it has unwisely started across. So, the question here is, why would these people think that they were bitten by brown recluse spiders? Oh, here's the funny part, though. Media attention and public dread have made loxo-cellism what Dr. Stocker calls a disease du jour, and many patients are convinced they have it. They get very angry and upset if contradicted, says Dr. Osterhout. Many websites, he adds, tell patients recurrent diseases brought on by brown recluse and how doctors just won't believe them. This is exacerbated by poison control data, as centers are dependent on information provided by callers. Few patients present with a spider, though. Even a stomped-on specimen has diagnostic value, since specialists rely on this sclerotized genitalia, eye arrangement, and hard-to-squish features like leg spination. The point here is that here's something that media is basically blown out of proportion, because they'll run shows on, you know, the top 10, the 10 most poisonous spiders or crap like that, or most dangerous snakes and such. So people see one or two. All they need to see is a reenactment of a guy. They show him sleeping in a bed, and then down comes a spider. And the spider bites him. And then, you know, from there they proceed to show horrible pictures of the swollen, as they're saying, necrotic regions that the guy has after it, and this lingers in people's minds. And the parallel here is to, you know, they're talking about neo-Nazis and the Klan and these evil racist haters. They magnify things that are tiny and they ignore things that are huge. And I think this is a fascinating non-political example of it. And like I said, it is on the front page. And the key there is, Twain said, it ain't what you know that gets you in trouble. It's what you know that, it ain't what you don't know that gets you in trouble. It's what you know that just ain't so. And the hilarious part is they get very, very angry when they're told this is not that kind of a bite. It's a spider. People are far more driven by their hallucinations and their imagination than they are by reality. It requires constant attention to see what is in front of one's nose, as Orwell said. We have to pay very careful attention to reality. We have to observe things. Then we have to try to use the language that we've developed, our verbal technology, to reflect what we see. In a world in which the people who own the mass media that tell us most of what we know about the world are primarily take concerns to hide the truth from us, to deceive us into believing the opposite is the reality of the case. Now, here they might have dramatized bites of the Black Widow or Brown Recluse as a way to scare people and sell product. There's no direct political goal of it, but we see how they would do the same thing with regard to, you know, white males or anybody who tried to stand up against the Jews is demonized, the ultimate horror. Oh, there's Nazis over here. The Nazis are back. The return of the beast. So they treat white males like they're brown recluse spiders out when in fact white males are the most productive sector of the world's human population. So don't take any wooden nickels. I guess that's the theme of today's show. Now I gotta go today. I can't stick around. Got some internal personal stuff to do. So I'm gonna play a couple songs and that will be it for today. Thanks for listening. I'll be on later in the week if I possibly can. I may have to go out of town for a couple days, but it's again, thanks for listening.
From my past, I was so happy, but joy in this life seldom lasts. I had a key. He helped me warn the ships at sea. We had grown closer, tell his joy meant everything to me. And he was to marry a girl who shone with beauty and light. And they loved each other, and with me watched the sun set into night. Down to sea, and the winds that blow remind me of what has been and what can ever be. Had to leave us. The keeper, he prayed for a safe return. But when the night came, the weather to a raging storm had turned. He watched our ship fight, but in vain against the well and terrible wind. In me so helpless, it's dashed against the rock she met her. then on the next day, my keeper found her washed up on the shore. He kissed her cold face, let they be together, soon he swore. I saw him crying, watched as he buried her in the sand. And then he climbed my tower, and off the edge of me he ran. And the waves crashed around me, and the sand slips out to sea. And the winds that blow remind me of what has been, and what can never be. I am a lighthouse, worn by the weather and the waves. And though I'm empty, I still warn the sailors on deck.